From December 16, 1811 through February 7th of 1812, three powerful earthquakes hit what is now called the New Madrid area. It's down by the Boot Hill of Missouri in that region. It is called now the New Madrid earthquake. Some sections of the Mississippi appeared to run backward for a short time. These earthquakes were so staggering. Sand blows were common throughout the area. As a matter of fact, they can still be seen from the air in cultivated fields. Shockwaves shot through the Midwestern bedrock. Residents as far away as Pittsburgh and Norfolk were awakened by intense shaking. Church bells were reported to ring as far as Boston, Massachusetts, and Toronto. And sidewalks were reported to have been cracked and broken in Washington, D.C. There were also reports of toppled chimneys in Maine. Homes destroyed in St. Louis. There have been 4,000 earthquakes in this area since 1974. And if you go to coasttocoastam.com and look at the map that Major Ed Dames has sent us, you will know why we're talking about that now. That'll be next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We'll review a lot of things that Major Dames has been talking with us about later on. But I want to get into this map, Ed, that you sent us that Lex has posted on our website. Kind of scary, especially for a guy who lives in St. Louis and has his family there. I'm right in the middle of all this. And no matter where I go, either St. Louis or Los Angeles, what's going on there?
Well, the events, recent events this week in Japan prompted me to say, okay, I better look ahead at the next one in the world and put the word out on the streets that even though we don't know the when, folks, give folks an option if they can trust what my work, the Matrix Intelligence Agency's work, to stay or go, okay, because we all have those choices. And I have to be very careful about how I word this because people are going to hear this and listen differently. So I'll be very succinct when I say this. Remote viewing, professional remote viewing, is extremely precise. It's highly technical and very rigorous. The way we search the global mind is not willy-nilly. It's very, very precise. And we have to make sure that we get those search terms correctly. So I entered into the matrix, the global mind, the search term, and these terms appear as ideas, patterns of information. There are no words in the global mind. The ideas have a meaning and a pattern all their own. I won't get into the technicalities. We do that in our advanced workshop, but not here. What I was looking for was the next mass human death-causing earthquake. And I don't mean just the next destructive earthquake like we saw, like we see coming up in some future in Carson City or Seattle. I don't mean just those. I mean something akin to what we're witnessing now in Japan, which is going to cause a lot of deaths, George.
Yes, no doubt.
So the idea specifically is the next mass human death-causing earthquake. And that's anywhere in the world, right? That's where we go in.
All right.
You know, and we're looking for output. The output, now, our lower thinking mind, instead of our higher mind, our lower egoic mind, our analytical mind, I would have thought that the output of that would be something like, oh, let's see, Indonesia again, maybe even Japan again, west coast of the United States, L.A., San Francisco. But that's not what came out.
And that's all possible still. You can't,
all those things are possible,
yeah,
but here are the two keys here. One key in terms of our science is the word next. We know that this works. It's tried and proven. There are a couple of other...
You may be right.
Well, it's not a matter in our mind's eye of right or wrong. My job is not to think or be right or wrong. My job is to know. If we can remote view something, an event in the future or in the past, it already exists in time. It's there. Otherwise, we would not be able to download it.
You know, experts, Ed, have said that if a big one hits there of a 777, it could be, economically, first of all, the biggest disaster in the United States ever.
Yes, I've seen the experts' assessments of that too, and I've seen the other thing. For instance, you have a nuclear power plant that's on very shaky ground, literally and figuratively, about 2 hours drive north of you at the Callaway plant. And the worst case analysis there, if that were to break, is 53,000 people.
Here are the states. Here are the states that could be affected by a major earthquake in the New Madrid seismic zone: Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Tennessee, Mississippi, a little bit of Alabama, Arkansas, Missouri, and who knows in wider regions around there. Like I was just saying, when these three hit in 1811, 1812, they heard these things, you know, church bells rang in Boston, in Toronto, sidewalks cracked in Washington, D.C., chimneys toppled in Maine. And that was back over 100 years ago when the population was not nearly what it was, where the cities weren't nearly as built up as they are now. Ed, now it could be a disaster of biblical proportions.
We're talking, well, actually the one in Japan is one of biblical proportions. It just hasn't had time yet.
If the nuclear plant wasn't involved in the earthquake in Japan, would you still say that?
No, I
it would just
not.
Be
because
a huge
just
disaster.
Rebuild it like we've always done.
Yeah.
But radiation, over the years, over the last 25 years, both in its top secret, you know, spy spy unit as well as a civilian intelligence group, we've watched these UFOs track. They know where every single warhead is. They know where every single nuclear storage site is. In fact, they've even monkeyed with some, as you know.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah.
They know where they all are. So that this has been a primary interest to them for one reason or another. Maybe sit down and have a coffee clash with them and find out why. But it's hugely disruptive to life on this planet. If you think of this planet as a garden, and this sterilizes the garden. Look at the Kishtim disaster when I was an intelligence officer. You know, we knew what happened in Kishtim, Russia. The whole place is a no man's land now because of an accident there. Chernobyl is the area around Chernobyl is much smaller than Kishtim. But if this New Madrid, when? Because it's a matter of when, George. This data would not have come out and pointed to New Madrid and the Wabash Valley seismic zone as the next one if it wasn't, if it didn't already exist in time, vis-a-vis that particular search term. But what I want to point out to you now at this juncture is that the most of the deaths will not be in Memphis and other places. They will be in St. Louis. And in fact, the Mississippi River may even change course
again,
just to the north of the city and come right through it.
Oh, jeez.
And I'm not kidding. I stand by this. I don't know when. We have techniques to get ballpark ideas.
A few years ago, I had just gotten off Coast to Coast. I was in St. Louis, just did the show, Ed. Went home. I was in bed, and all of a sudden, it sounded like Santa Claus was on the roof, and it was bizarre. I mean, you could. It sounded like somebody was on the roof walking. It's impossible. And sure enough, we got hit by an earthquake. I was on CNN that morning on the phone with them, and that was in St. Louis. Sadly, and again, I know this isn't right or wrong with you, but sadly, I think you're accurate that this is going to happen. We just don't know when, but I think it's going to be sooner than later.
I think it's going to be very soon because of this quickening, and a layperson's term, because of what's happening and what we're seeing now and the sun's effect on the core of the earth. You really need to protect your family and take all the things that are near and dear to you. Take them to L.A. of all places. Now, you know, think about that. One of the most earthquake prone place, the San Andreas Fault, all that. Here we are. I'm telling you, move your stuff there, because we're looking at a tragic situation that will take an already bankrupt country like ourselves, you know, and make us paupers worldwide.
Well, folks, it's that map is up there at coasttocoastam.com that Major Ed Dames has sent to us. Take a look at it. You know what? Part of this, though, is, you know, we're telling people now about the possibilities, Ed. We don't have a timetable. We all have our personal gut feelings about this. People should at least take some simple precautions, don't you think?
Yes, I said this when we talked about the Carson City prediction. That, you know, folks, you know, just take some simple go to the USGS website and all those kind of things. But this in conjunction, these kinds of cataclysms, apocalyptic things almost, in conjunction with the solar kill shot, these extreme flares that we're about to get hit with too, you've got to do more than take simple precautions. It's no longer any curiosity to us as remote viewers why we've never established or been able to discern survival zones in the American Midwest and proper. And now it's apparent that we've got this thing that's coming on top of this kill shot. And I want to make sure before we leave tonight that at least I give your listeners some of the regional data that in terms of survival.
Sure.
Between now and the end of 2013, where you're either dead or alive in many parts of North America, some accurate information that we've established as a team and as professionals over the years. Well, where to go and where not to go.
If you plan properly and you thank God you're not in that area near the epicenter, you can get out of this.
Yes. You not only get out of it, but you can actually maintain some type of a quality of life with you and your family. I would like to talk about those parameters.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. The first thing is, you know, area. We over the years, I've talked about areas. By the way, that Callaway plant, the Callaway nuclear power plant, it takes its cooling water from the Missouri River, but that's a few miles away.
Yes, it is.
So anything can go wrong in terms of getting coolant to that plant, and the pipes have already corroded and ruptured there once. So it's not a good place to be. In North America, I'm not going to address other. The Southern Hemisphere, I'm not going to address Europe or Asia. I just want to talk about the Northern Hemisphere, Canada and the U.S.
Okay? All right. Go ahead.
All right. Where you don't want to be, and all of the parameters we've talked about in your show before, too, you're going to need food, fish in streams, grow your own food, hydroponics.
Have some water.
You have to have water. That's number one. It's got to be fresh water, too. A lot of aquifers are going to change, and wells will dry up and those kinds of things. So we allow the global mind to adjudicate those things for us. It's the master problem solver. It can parallel process all kinds of – a myriad of things that in terms of survival and tell us as individuals where to go in times ahead. Canada. Let's start with Canada. Anywhere to the west of the Rockies, you're on shaky ground. You get over to Vancouver and places like that, you're lucky if you can make it through the water that's going to hit you. Same thing with Seattle, too. Saskatchewan and Manitoba, yes. You know, north or south. I'm generally speaking.
Yeah, but are you saying that everybody in Seattle pick up and leave?
I'm saying that you play the game and you take your chances. Obviously, old people who have been in their homes for, you know, 60 years, they can't pick up and leave. They can't do it. We're talking.
I would say 98% of the people can't leave. They're stuck there.
No, not 98%. I'd say maybe 80, but not 98.
Well, that's still a huge percent.
I'm only talking to. I can either tell you this or not.
No, I want you to tell me.
Okay. Alberta, Saskatchewan.
Yeah, you're a fighter, aren't you?
Yeah. Alberta, Saskatchewan, too. Anything east of eastern Manitoba? No. So there we have Canada. All right? Plenty of fresh water. Plenty of the reason, of course, you have plenty of fresh water in most of BC, British Columbia, mm-hmm. for instance, and beautiful land and things like that, too. But unfortunately, they're going to be subject to extreme seismic and wave action. So that we know.
All right.
And before I go any further about the continental U.S., I'd like to say that even if you have, and we're not talking bunker mentality here, I'm going to in a moment, even if you've got fresh water and plenty of food and all of that, at one point, a point's going to be reached, and we're talking long periods of time here, too. It's going to be a long time before things come back to normal, and they never will be normal as we knew it before, status quo pro ante on this planet. But a point's going to be reached where you're going to need other people. You cannot really survive at that long without other people. People need people. You have to work together. Right now, there are many small communities that are off the grid, and they're very quiet. All over North America, they're very quiet. They have to be quiet because these sanctuaries, these enclaves of these type of people, if others find out about them, the others may not be of the same mentality, if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay, good. The bunker mentality, folks, is great. And if you're in the cities, you have to have a bunker mentality, plenty of ammo and all that, escape from L.A., that kind of thing. But if you're in these enclaves, all of your resources need to be on providing food and sustenance and medical care for your families and friends. If you have to guard a perimeter and spend all your time securing a border, then it takes away from all these survival activities. But that's what you have to do if you're in metropolitan areas. So let's continue on to North America.
Okay.
The coast, both coasts, no. You can't be near the coast, but for two reasons. One, because of the wave action, because of the population densities. There's no food on the shelves, those kind of things, too. People don't grow their own food on the coast. They go shopping. And everybody can see, if you're online, just go take a look at the shopping, the supermarkets in Tokyo right now. You'll understand what I mean. Everybody knows that too. So there are no survival zone. There are no true survival zones in California. There are some in western or eastern Oregon. And I told you about the Midwest. There's nothing there. However, in the Pacific Northwest, there are several, butted up against the Canadian border. Interestingly, in the American Southwest, Arizona and parts of New Mexico, there are survival zones too. None in Texas, none in the Gulf states. Interestingly, there's some very, very fine survival points in the Appalachian Mountains, especially in the southern portion. Particularly on the believe it or not, on the eastern side, please take note of this, of the Appalachians, too. There are none in the American Northeast.
None.
There are a couple to the west of the Great Lakes in the U.S. too. If you're an American citizen and you try to go to Saskatchewan, Alberta, when the stuff hits the fan, you're going to be kicked out because you're not a Canadian citizen. So there are some practical considerations as well, but for most of us, we're SOL. You can email me if you don't know what that means.
That they know what that means, Edward.
Yeah, we're really screwed.
They've been doing some earthquake drills in Illinois. They're getting ready for something.
Yeah, George, you know, there's a lot of the scientific community that knows what's going down. I would like to call your listeners' attention and yourself to the Norwegians.
Let's come right back and talk about that, Ed. That, and we'll go through some of the past predictions, let you give us some updates there as well. Phone calls next hour with Major Ed Dames. And our special guest tonight, Major Ed Dames, his latest work, Tell Me What You See, fascinating work with Joel Heery Newman. Well, a brand new chat room has opened up for you, by the way. Those of you who like to chat while you're listening to the program, it's coasties2coasties.com. Then you click a link, and it takes you to one of their chat sites. And the Coasties to Coasties, it's with the number 2, not T-O. So coasties2coasties.com. Have a good time there. And we'll be back in a moment with Major Ed Dames on Coast to Coast AM. Ed, you were talking about the Norwegians. Go ahead. What did you mean?
Well, if you look at Norway, I really admire that the country and the model. It's unlike the U.S. In terms of their people and how the country was founded, but a great government, high quality of life, but very perspicacious government as well. As you know, they built, they constructed the seed vault on Svarte Island.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's just because they were, I don't think they were psychic. I think they just looked ahead and said,
it's just smart people.
They're very smart. Yeah. And we're going, they wouldn't have constructed a vault that needed to be protected like an air raid shelter or survival shelter if they didn't think they needed it. So I'm sure that that government knows what's coming, and if they're going to rebuild anything that looks like Earth did before this disaster, it's going to be an apocalypse. They're going to have seeds as well, you know, the hybrid seeds, and they also may have done it because of genetically modified organisms corrupting original seed heritage seeds, if you will. But all the way around, that's what people need to do. They need to be smarter. And we're too focused on what's going on in Hollywood and in other places. We're not focused on anything at all except things that are meaningless, certainly nothing eternal.
You know, when I was watching the video Thursday night and the Friday morning here of the tsunami, Ed, I just, you know, it just tells you that we cannot stop Mother Nature. When this planet does what it does, no matter what your technology is, no matter how strong your military is, no matter how good your economy may or may not be, you can't stop these weather conditions. You can't stop this tornado. They think they can stop hurricanes. I'm not so sure. And then these tsunamis blow in.
No, I think we have to be smarter. And but also, in an ancillary way, there's no way that this planet, the resources on the surface of this planet, can support human beings, the population densities, and the way we treat the planet. That's impossible. Let's face it. It's impossible to do in the future if you project forward, extrapolate into the future too. So I'm not saying these things that are going to cull the human race, and it will cull to the tune of at least a third of the population on the planet, are good things, but and we would not have been able to sustain ourselves, you know, beyond another 100, 150 years anyway. And there's one more thing I wish to bring up before we take phone calls.
No, well, we'll do that next hour.
So, oh, okay. And that's the ozone layer. The global warming, I have to agree, and I have a partisan, and Dr. Piers Corbin, someone that finally recognizes, like I do, but from a scientific perspective, not a remote viewing perspective, that the sun is most of the generative factor in most of the Earth's weather changes and weather.
It's changing the entire solar system, and I don't know why people don't realize that.
You know what? I used to have to bring this. I used to brief the National Security Council on various things, and I've talked about this on your show before. One of the most difficult things for me to get across to these staid, stoic, old, crusty scientists and others in the National Security Council was, how come the Russians could build this and we couldn't? That kind of thing. And I have to explain, it's because they look at the world differently. They, at the time, were, you know, dialectic materialism was the philosophy, the driving force behind the erstwhile Soviet Union. And dialectic materialism looks at the world and human beings in a different way. We don't have souls, and we're not eternal, blah, blah, blah. The Communist Manifesto is this and that. And if you look at the world a different way with a different philosophy, you have a different science. If you have a different science, you have a different education system and a different technology. And you build things differently. And that's number one. For instance, how come the Russians could build a battlefield laser and we couldn't? Well, it's because of they look at things a different way. But the more importantly, what I had to get across to these old fogies, excuse me, to my my bosses, were, you know, gentlemen, we are a nation in this country, my country, United States. We're a nation of specialists. So you have to. I mean, you, in order to keep up with your specialty, you have to do nothing but read 24/7 on your specialty to keep up with the Joneses. But still, at that time, when we're talking the Cold War era, the 80s, we have a nation over there across the water of generalists, and they can see the forest for the trees because of their innate philosophy at the time, which was very different than ours. And that's why they could build a battlefield laser and we can't, that kind of a thing. So we're focused. We choose, in this country, we choose to focus on things rather than standing back and looking at the big picture, because we don't have time to do that. We're too busy. We're just too busy. But that'll change when all of a sudden the iPhones don't work and the ATMs don't work.
Yep.
Yeah. And then we'll have time to sit down with our family and maybe talk and get to know our neighbor, those kinds of things.
Well, they won't have time for much anything else but to do that.
But anyway, let's get back to the ozone layer, because what the ozone layer, the degradation of the ozone layer, this approximately, you know, 20-mile thick layer, what is happening is that it is deteriorating drastically. And this has extremely serious consequences for the future of planet life on Earth, extremely. I can't get into all of them on the show, but I'm saying that this degradation is man-made caused. And science is aware that man has, not all these questions about global warming aside, that man really has, all the scientists are in agreement that we are destroying with our chemicals the ozone layer, and the consequences in the out years are extremely difficult. As remote viewers, when I did this contract for Lawrence Rockefeller years ago, we saw this. We said to our client, you know, there are no remedial technologies for this. But and then we had to take him aside quietly and privately and say, you know, when stuff hits the fan and much of the Earth is a barren place, all of a sudden there's somebody else here, and they build these generators. We have sketches of them. Maybe I'll send some to you, fax them to you, of these generators that this other race helps us build to regenerate the Earth's ozone layer.
I hope we need that, and we need that now, Ed.
No, not going to happen. We're talking 50 years.
All right. Let me ask you about Yellowstone. What do you see?
Nothing. I mean, I haven't looked that way. Maybe I don't want to look. I mean, I know that many of your listeners are aware that if that thing goes off, the bye-bye USA. But honestly, I think I would have picked that up over the years, if something, I know what the fears are, and I know what the history of that is, tectonically and otherwise, in terms of volcanism, but it's never popped up in any of our geologic work in North America, and we would have picked it up, George, if it was ready to blow, and we just haven't seen it.
Yeah.
In fact, we know of enclaves, survival enclaves, that are very close to Yellowstone, and that and Global Mine would not have given us that as output if, in the case where Yellowstone was going to be was going to blow.
Let's talk about some of the past predictions. I want to get your take on where you think we're headed. First of all, back in June of last year, you said Israel will go to war with Iran. America will get involved clandestinely. You still think that's happening?
Ah, yes. Yes, I do.
Sooner than later? I mean,
I think Israel obviously feels that they're going to be surrounded soon, and that they've been abandoned by our commander-in-chief, my commander-in-chief. And they're going to have to take things into their own hands, too. They're not going to wait until they're surrounded. But there's things that are playing into politically. If you really do your research, you'll see that the present situation in many ways plays into the hands of the Israelis. But that's a far more complex political agenda and topic than we can talk about tonight.
You say no economic recovery. None.
None. It's going to be every nation for themselves, George. Yeah.
Are we going to lose our value of our money? Are they going to, you know,
I want
dump the dollar?
There are lots of There are lots of things I could say about that, but I would like to point out one thing that will be very interesting for you and your listeners.
All right.
It's kind of a big red flag, but you might not have noticed, but I have. If you take out your wallet, if you're lucky enough to have any money at all in your wallets right now, open them up and take out the bills and look at the state, the condition of that paper. And remember back 10 years ago or whatever, where banks would take out of circulation money. The crummy ones.
Yeah.
I mean the ones that are really ready to fall apart, but that's not true anymore. They're not doing that.
Why not?
Well, maybe they'll...
You're right. They're all shoddy looking now.
That's right. And they're not getting replaced. They're not getting replaced by new dollars. Does that tell you something? There's a plan afoot there.
They're not getting replaced
by new
they're
dollars.
They're merely being added to the mix.
They're just being recirculated and allowed. They're not being, no more, no. The new money that's being printed is overseas.
Yeah.
If I go overseas and I use an ATM in Russia or Ukraine, brand new, spanking new bills too. But in the States, if I go to the bank and I want to exchange my old, you know, toilet paper quality bills for new money, the banks have to, they have to spend 10 minutes, the tellers, looking for something that's reasonable to give me. And that's a very interesting thing. What's going to come down to replace all that paper? What new form of paper? Interesting, isn't it?
Very interesting, indeed.
Yeah, so that's in terms of the economy. Folks can do their own research. You know that I've used my, I hated to take away from more important things, but I had to go and spend many months using my stock and trade to find gold in the field, placer gold. And placer gold's good because gold nuggets, you can't counterfeit. And now there's a big problem, it's arising on the streets, indeed, even in bank vaults, about ingots that are tungsten-coated gold. Replacing real gold, and coins that will really ruin the gold and silver market that may be counterfeit. They're plug nickels.
Sure.
But
they look real, but they're not.
Yeah. But what I like about my own projects is that I'm on to rich concentrations of placer gold. And I can take the gold nuggets in, and you can't counterfeit a gold nugget. So that was a good thing.
I love this one. You said that Bigfoot actually transported here from vehicles in deep space that beam them down to certain safe points. Tell me about that again.
We don't know if they're vehicles or if they're actually being. It looks as if they're actually being transported from the surface of another planet. We're not seeing any vehicles. It's a very complex, technologically complex operation. It looks like they're beaming here from the surface of another world, a very cold, stark world, and then going back. And I'll probably have to lecture on it somewhere too, because it's so complex. But they're like the, you know, our buddy in Star Trek, don't mess with the Waki, he'll rip your arms off, that kind of thing. So who would ever imagined, you know, a gorilla at the helm of a starship? Well, that's what you're looking at in the woods if you run into one of these. You're looking at Chewbacca. No, they don't wear any clothes, but they're highly, highly technologically advanced. And they only come for a while, and then they go back. And we do not understand why. At first, we thought they were scientists at first 15 years ago. Now, then we thought maybe they're just tourists, but it's, we haven't put together the agenda of why they come and go.
Crop circles created by underground robotic entities on Mars that focus on some kind of holographic energy.
Yeah, there's a place on the surface of Mars, and in this place on underground Mars, there are what appear we've got great corroborative sketches. And remember, as remote viewers, the professional viewer is not told what the target is. It could be anything.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So the corroboration is the same sketches of the tracking back from the origin of these circles. The circles are cut by tools. There's photos, videos of them. Small spears, maybe 2 feet wide, that are bouncing around and cutting the not the ones that are laid out by planks, high school, by college kids, but the real ones out there, extraterrestrial ones. These are tools that are generated from afar by this underground place on Mars. These spheres are made up of carbon that are taken from the atmosphere and, in some cases, oil deposits on the surface of Earth. They're made into temporary tools, very sophisticated tools. They cut the circle, and then the sphere comes up into the atmosphere, and all the carbon dissipates back into the atmosphere. So the tool's not – it's a throwaway tool, like a throwaway toothbrush or shaving thing. And all of these shapes – are cataloged at this place underground on Mars by these robots. That's all I know how to call them. And they're projected in a way like a beam, like a holographic beam. The shapes are programmed into this tool, and the tool cuts the shape in this in ephemeral media, whether it's sorghum or rye or wheat. I've sat down with Linda Moulton Howe before, and
you've talked about this.
Yeah.
When a novice remote views, is it easier for them to just view the present, or can they also do the future? A novice.
It doesn't matter for the novice. First of all, for new remote viewers, they're never told consciously. They're unconsciously being trained to do all the work, precise, rigorous work in a very standard procedure. Just think of sheet music, where everybody's on the same sheet of music. But it makes no difference whether the target's present, past, or future. The present is, of course, ephemeral, and past or future. It makes no difference whatsoever. What makes a difference is their skill level. You cannot, as a teacher, give a new student anything sophisticated. They're taught on the basic level to remote view, just training targets so they get feedback in terms of photos, or at the end of the session, but it doesn't matter whether it's past or present. It makes no bearing whatsoever on the quality of the results.
Can you go back into time? Can you look at the JFK assassination, find out what happened?
Yes, I think I've mentioned that a number of times on the show. We've done that. I've done it personally too. And we can recreate the event. And we've done that, yes. Yeah.
What do you prefer, going to the future, going back into time?
I'm almost 62 years old. I'm getting ready to draw Social Security. So if I'm lucky, I have maybe 30 years of life left or whatever. So I'm pretty picky about what I want to do and look at. In remote viewing, you can know anything. There's nothing that you cannot know, with some limitations of the software and hardware. Software meaning our cognitive conditioning, our cultural conditioning, and hardware meaning our bicameral brain. And I won't get into those technicalities. We do that in an advanced workshop. But I'm pretty picky about what I want to spend my time on, because remote viewing is a lot of work.
Right.
So
it's got to be exhausting sometimes.
It can be. It can be exciting, very exciting, as you might guess, but it's still work. So I have personal preferences. That's all. Everybody has their own preferences, whether it's sports, gaming, winning the lottery, extraterrestrials, medical conditions and solutions. Some of my students have been some of the best doctors in their fields in the world.
Very intuitive. Ed, stay with us. We're going to come back now and take phone calls for the final hour right here on Coast to Coast AM.